This podcast is created for adult audiences only and contains content that may be alarming to some viewers. Listener discretion is advised. Any badass views or opinions you're about to hear are those of the hosts and do not represent those of the people, institutions, or organizations that the podcast may or may not be associated with. So just don't be a dick. You know what you're getting yourself into.
All right, hey guys, welcome to Girls Gone Weird. Still want to say Girls Gone Wild, but it's Girls Gone Weird. Today we have an awesome episode that Denny is featuring for us on JonBenet Ramsey. We all know her. We all love her.
Yep, I'm excited about this one, only because I'm glad that it's over with. I've been working on this for about a month and a half. I think a month and a half, right?
It's been a long time.
Last night, before we're recording in the morning, I had to stop myself and be like, stop looking at this case. Stop looking at it.
I'm just going to go on and on and on and on.
You're not going to get any further. So many people have done this case, and I wanted to do it a little bit different, where I wanted to look at it as I've almost never looked at it before. Like, almost like it was a new case directly in front of me. I avoided looking at other podcasts or documentaries or anything like that for a while because I actually found an archive, and I'll post a link to it on our Instagram when we post this, an archive of like autopsy reports and all the reports that they had on the suspects and everything like that, that the Freedom of Information Act brought out in this case. So I tried to start focusing on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before. I also want to look at this as, I don't know how to describe this. The media really made this case into something that was almost like a pop culture icon, and I don't want to go that route. I know that it's a very famous case, but I want to go the route where we remember this is a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This was a person, and she was a little girl that belonged to a family.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to go the route where I don't want to place an opinion on who did it, because we all have opinions. Everyone's like, the mom did it, or the dad did it, or mm-hmm. the Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that everyone that listens to this keeps an open mind.
Fresh ears.
I'm going to say all the information that I have collected and found. I am going to say all the sides. I will try not to place an opinion. I might tell some opinions because Nicole and I are very opinionated, so we might say something's fucked up.
Mm-hmm, slightly biased.
Yes. But honestly, going down this and look at the evidence, I haven't got any closer to knowing, which is probably why it's an open case, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's probably why it's a cold case. So do you remember where you were when you heard about the JonBenet Ramsey case?
I mean, we were pretty damn young, so just at home, sitting on my couch. I think it was shielded from me a little bit because it was so, you know, it's devastating, especially when, you know, your parents are dealing with children, you know, that are young as well, and it's not something that you want to always talk to your kids about, unless you're your own mother, yours.
Yeah. Yeah, my family was very into this case, not only because she was our age, but also because I was a pageant queen myself.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't run in the same circles because it seemed like we were both kind of just in state type of deal. Mm-hmm. But I think it was just kind of a connection
mm-hmm.
because of that. So I really wanted to focus on this case of seeing, I was kind of putting myself in this case of how I would have wanted if this happened to me shown, and I wouldn't want to be shown as a pageant girl. And after reading and learning about who she was, I don't think she would have either. And I'll kind of tell her story and we'll kind of explain how that is. So should we get started, everybody? Open minds.
Yeah. You really just explained anything I was going to say. What do you want to tell viewers about your story that's different from anything they may have heard? You know, some people may go, oh, I've already heard this, skip, you know. But I think if you're coming at it with fresh eyes and you've got different takes and you've got different evidence that other people haven't brought up. That's interesting. And you're going to bring us through it from start to finish. So you're going, everybody's going to get a refresher, like they don't know the case. So let's just pretend that we don't know anything.
And please do, because there's a lot that I didn't know and I thought I knew everything. So we'll get started.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So we'll start with John Ramsey. Now, John Ramsey was born in Lincoln, Nebraska in 1943. He earned a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering in 1966. Now, that same year, he married Lucinda Pash. And first, I'll apologize to everyone if I say last names wrong. And he joined the U.S. Navy. Now, whilst he was in the Navy overseas, he earned a master's degree in business and had three children. So he had a family before this.
Okay.
Had three children. In 1978, he divorced his wife and married a young, beautiful pageant queen, Patsy Powell. Mm-hmm. So he went for a younger version, I guess, is what people are saying, the kind of guy he was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So together they had two children. So they had Burke in 1987, and then in 1990, JonBenet was born. So that same year that JonBenet was born, he started a company and was very financially successful. Like, he really built himself up to be a millionaire. A lot of people don't know this, but in 1991, John and Patsy moved their family to Boulder, Colorado. So that was only about a year after JonBenet was born. And that same year, John's 22-year-old daughter, Elizabeth, died in a car crash.
Oh.
So, yeah. Mm. So he actually had a daughter before JonBenet that passed away.
Yeah. In a car, do we know anything else about the car crash?
We do not, but...
there's nothing suspicious?
Nothing suspicious, but I'll talk a little bit about it later, and I'll come back to that when we're talking about this.
Okay.
As a stay-at-home mom, Patsy spent most of her time with JonBenet, having her follow her in her pageant footsteps. Now, JonBenet was a decorated beauty pageant contestant winner, winning titles as, like, Little Miss Colorado, All-Star Kids, Cover Girl, American Royal, and National Tiny Miss Beauty. Now, most people knew her as that, but besides that... Even though JonBenet was a beauty queen, her older brother, John Andrew Ramsey, described her as a tomboy that actually loved to play outside with her siblings. Her favorite activities were rollerblading and skiing, and she excelled at math and really liked to read. Like, she was a bookworm, just an intelligent girl, just a little smarty. So a lot of people see her as this beauty queen, but according to her older siblings, that's not really how she wanted to be shown. Now, Patsy displayed all of her trophies in the living room area, and when family talked about JonBenet and talked about, you know, oh, wow, look at all your trophies, JonBenet actually stated to a family friend, they're not actually for me, they're really for my mom. You know, as parents, trying to live through your kids type of deal.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So let's start on Christmas night 1996. Now, the Patsy family went to a friend's party on the way home. JonBenet fell asleep, and this was according to the Ramseys. Around 10 p.m., John Ramsey carried JonBenet to bed and put her to sleep in the clothes she was wearing from the party, not to disturb her. The next morning, around 5:30 a.m., Patsy gets up to make coffee early because that morning the family was going to take their private plane to Michigan to see John's other children for the holidays. On the way down the stairs, she finds a 2.5-page ransom note right on the stairs stating a group had taken her daughter, JonBenet. Patsy said she only read the first few sentences, started freaking out, and ran to JonBenet's room to find her missing. She called a family friend to ask him what she should do.
Yeah, I would call the police immediately.
So she said, freaked out, Mealy just called a family friend. About 15 minutes later, so at 5:45, despite the note's warning, Patsy Ramsey calls 911. She states, we have a kidnapping. Hurry, please. Now, she then proceeded to call more family and more friends to come over. Now, according to the Ramseys, during this whole thing, Burke stayed asleep the whole time, and John heard the commotion and started running downstairs.
So she didn't even wake him up, just in freak-out mode.
Yes, and I didn't know... So here's the thing. So the Ramseys have changed their stories a few times, and I've learned that from the notes from the detective, but I've also learned that on different stories it said John was sleeping and he heard the commotion. One said he was in the shower and ran out, heard the commotion. So I don't really want to say where he was because there's because they've changed their stories and everything, but he heard it. She didn't go straight to him. She went straight to the room and started calling friends. Mm-hmm. And that's according to the Ramses. Yeah. Now, okay. I am going to read the ransom note. Now, the ransom note is 2.5 pages, and this is probably the main piece of evidence, and it was very strange, which is why I was going to just touch base on it a little bit, but I think it is important to read it all, just so you can get an idea.
Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm, I want to hear.
Yeah. So it starts, Mr. Ramsey, listen carefully. We are a group of individuals that represent a small foreign faction. We do respect your business, but not the country it serves. At this time, we have your daughter in our possession. Now, I'm going to tell you a lot of these words are misspelled. She is safe and unharmed, and if you want her to see her in 1997, you must follow our instructions to the letter. You will withdraw $118,000 from your account. $100,000 will be in $100 bills, and the remaining $18,000 in $20 bills. Make sure that you bring an adequate size attache to the bank. Strange. When you get home, you will put the money in a brown bag. I will call you between 8 and 10 a.m. tomorrow to instruct you on delivery. The delivery will be exhausting, so I advise you to get rested. If we monitor you getting the money early, we might call you early to arrange an earlier delivery of money and hence an earlier pickup of your daughter. Any deviation of my instructions will result in the immediate execution of your daughter. You will also be denied her remains for proper burial. The two gentlemen watching over your daughter do not particularly like you, so I advise you not to provoke them. Speaking to anyone about your situation, such as police, FBI, etc., will result in your daughter being beheaded. If we catch you taking a stray dog, she dies. If you alert bank authorities, she dies. If the money is in any way marked or tampered with, she dies. You will be scanned for electronic devices, and if any are found, she dies. You can try to deceive us, but be warned that we are familiar with law enforcement countermeasures and tactics. You stand a 99% chance of killing your daughter if you try to outsmart us. Follow our instructions, and you will stand a 100% chance of getting her back. You and your family are under constant scrutiny, as well as the authorities. Don't try to grow a brain, John. You are not the only fat cat around, so don't think that killing will be difficult. Don't underestimate us, John. Use that good Southern common sense of yours. It's up to you now, John. Victory. S-B-T-C.
Interesting.
Isn't that the longest, weirdest note that you've ever heard?
It is very strange.
And
all the detail, and it does sound very personal, like they have some sort of vendetta.
Yeah, and asking for like the money in a certain way. It just seems like a lot of details.
That's also not a lot of money.
Not for a millionaire. Like, no.
I mean it's a super expensive car or a very cheap house for some people. I mean, if you're taking a child for ransom, you're going to be up in that ante a bit. Yep. And they're so like gung-ho about every detail for just this small amount of money.
Yeah, and we'll for sure really go through that ransom note too, because it's a huge piece of evidence. And another weird thing is there's actually quotes in there from Speed and Dirty Harry. The movies. So it's like, is this a cinema buff? Like, what is going on here? So she called the police at 5:45, and they arrived by 5:52, so they were pretty quick. So at 5:52, Boulder police officers Rick French and Carl Veitch, again, apologize if I say that wrong, arrive at the Ramsey home and conduct a quick search of the home. Now, in the basement, they found a cellar with a latch, but because they were only looking for points of entry for an intruder, they didn't even open it. They reported no obvious signs of forced entry, and the only room they cornered off was JonBenét's. So, and...
Well, that's sloppy.
Yeah, and immediately people are trying to defend the police in this, saying, you know, it was the day after Christmas, they were understaffed, there's really no homicides in this area, so it's not like the detectives very much knew this, but yeah, they were very messy, for sure. Now, during the search, the police shined a light in Burke's room, where, again, he just laid there and continued to sleep.
No comment.
Yeah, the sun. Yep. Friends, family, and the family minister came over during this time, contaminating the whole scene. A family friend even began cleaning up the kitchen counters and all around the kitchen during this whole thing.
So many mistakes.
John began to make arrangements for the ransom money. And note, according to Detective Arndt, John and Patsy stayed in different rooms the entire time. Now, around 8 o'clock a.m., that's when Detective Linda Arndt, and she's very important in this, responded to the Ramsey home. She was the first investigator on the scene. So it was 5:45. It wasn't until 8 o'clock an actual detective came on the scene. And they left her there, and she remained the only police officer for several hours by herself.
Yeah. Wow.
Now, on the note, it said, obviously, that they were going to call between 8 and 10 a.m., the kidnappers, but they never called. Detective Arndt noted that no one even seemed to care or even tried to go by the phone. So it's almost like everyone forgot about it, which she thought was very strange. And then also, for about 90 minutes, John completely disappeared.
I mean, I get there's a lot going on, and you need a breather, but you don't do that. You just...
Yeah. And we'll go through it, who knows, but very, very strange. Around 1 o'clock p.m., Detective Arndt told John Ramsey and family friend Rick French to search the home top to bottom to see if they could find anything suspicious. She said she was pretty much just trying to give them busy work to give them something to do to keep their mind off everything. It was only about 5 minutes later that John headed straight to the basement cellar, and without even turning the light on, John Ramsey knelt down to finding his daughter's body, immediately took the duct tape off her mouth, so found her laying right in this room that he went immediately to, picked up his daughter, and brought her upstairs. His friend started screaming for an ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, JonBenet was found with her hands tied up above her head. This is just immediately what they saw. A deep laceration around her throat from a homemade garrote and a white blanket. And when he started carrying her upstairs, Detective Arndt immediately told Ramsey to put the body down. So, a little scary. Now, I'm going to say, I'm not saying anything about this, but I do want to say a little quote from Detective Arndt. She, on an interview in 1999, Detective Arndt stated that her and John immediately knelt down to the body and they looked at each other. She said they had a nonverbal exchange that she will never forget. She said she remembers tucking her gun next to her and consciously counting the bullets, thinking, I've got 18 bullets here, because I didn't know if everyone was going to come out alive. She was terrified. John grabbed a blanket and immediately covered her daughter's body. And this is when Patsy ran into the room and laid herself on top of the body. It was a lot of contamination. You can read that as you must. You could read that as, obviously, we don't know, like, if this we were in this situation as parents. We just found our daughter's body. We wouldn't know how we would react. Type of deal. It could have been just, you know, an emotional response, or, and maybe they didn't know, like we know, you don't contaminate evidence. Like, you see something, you step away immediately, but that's not what happened in this case.
Emotions are high. I don't know if I could do that if the same happened to me as a mother.
Very, very hard. Now, John E. Meyer, MD, was the pathologist who conducted the autopsy on JonBenet Ramsey at the office of the Boulder, Colorado coroner. Now, this was the next morning that they did this. Now, based on evidence, he estimated the time of death was at latest 4:30 a.m. and earliest 11 p.m. the night before.
Okay.
So, according to the Ramseys, they put her to bed. They brought her in bed around 10 p.m. and so he was thinking that time between 11 p.m. and 4:30 a.m. So it's a long time, considering they found the body around 1. So
okay.
Now, the cause of death was strangulation. Even so, she suffered a blunt force trauma and had a lash covering her entire head, which was an opening of about 8.5 inches. Now, the blunt force trauma was approximately 1 to 2 hours before the strangulation even happened, but was so severe the autopsy specialists believe if left untreated, that would have been fatal, because there is bleeding and bruising to her brain. So she was hit 1 to 2 hours before she was even dead from strangulation. Now,
let's hope it just knocked her out.
That's the hope, but there's some evidence that that might not be the case. The strangulation was caused by a homemade garrote from a paintbrush. Now, do you know what a garrote is? It's kind of like a, it's something where you take like a stick and a string and you can tie it, and when you twist it, it makes it tighter. Does that make sense?
Yes, I do. Right when you said that, I pictured it. I know what that is. Yep.
Perfect. So there was a deep circling around her neck where it actually cut into the skin. She had similar abrasions on her lower back with, and this is what they believed that she might have been awake. She had scratch-like abrasions around her left leg and also around her neck like she was trying to stop the strangulation, which is just gives you goosebumps and is terrible.
Yeah.
This is also supported by DNA evidence that was found under her fingernails that she was struggling. And I'm sorry about talking about this, but a little girl, but needs to be said.
Yeah.
The outfit she was wearing was covered in blood and urine. Her panties were soiled with urine and what Meyer describes as having several areas of red staining. Next to her also laid another pair of pajamas. So it was almost like there was a pair of pajamas laying next to her and she had the blood and urine on her. Her vaginal area did not have any signs of semen or signs of rape, but she did have signs of sexual trauma, which was ongoing. So it wasn't... So inside of her vagina were actually wood shards that could belong to the paintbrush, they believe, possibly, but they couldn't really confirm that. But showing evidence that she did have evidence that she did have something inserted into her, and her her vagina was actually wiped clean.
Oh, so there were just, like, leftover wood shards that did not get cleaned out good enough.
Yeah. And it was ongoing. So when they checked her, they're like, this wasn't just something that happened this one time. This was something like she had a history of sexual abuse. Yeah. The ropes tied around her wrist were, like, loose, too, which was showing evidence that they were not used to bind her, but almost like to stage it, because it wasn't something where... you know, was being used. And then in her stomach were traces of pineapple. And we'll talk a little bit more about that pineapple because that's such a huge thing in the case. I personally don't think it is, but it's something that people like to go into. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Now, when her body was found, we do not know, we didn't have like the advancements and testing that we do now in DNA. Besides, it was also minimal DNA, but luckily they did collect it and they did keep it. Now, small amounts of DNA were found around her long johns and panties, along with under her fingernails and on the garrote. And all the DNA was trace evidence DNA. So what that means is trace evidence, in this case, was like touch DNA, and it's easily transferable. So there wasn't like blood, and there wasn't semen or spit or anything like that, which is very strange, because if someone's going to kill you or hit you, or even if you have gloves on, usually there's some sort, but it was all touch, and it was very, very minimal. So there was two sets of DNA on her panties, none of which matched each other, and both were unidentified male. So it was actually two sets of touch DNA on her panties.
Two males.
Now, the DNA from the... Two males. Yep. And then DNA from two males and one female was found under Jompany's fingernails. Now, unfortunately, the DNA evidence was too tiny and badly degraded to determine whether the source was skin, blood tissue, or blood. But they connected on her fingernails to one female and two males. Now, after running the DNA, none of it belonged to a family member, nor was it a hit in the system. So they couldn't find anybody that possibly had a past crime or that it was family. So they found five different people's DNA on Jompany.
Wow.
Yeah. An unidentified pubic hair was found in the blanket that was partially covering her body, along with an unidentified palm print that was found in the area of the wine cellar door. Again, unidentified. There is no evidence of blood splatter in the Ramsey home, which is strange, because if you hit someone over the head, there would be blood splatter.
Yeah.
So you could say, you know, she was there the whole time. She could have been taken and then put back. So that is some of the evidence that could cause of, you know, being done someplace else. Now, yeah, doctor...
makes things confusing.
Yeah, and this whole case is confusing. So when people say, like, oh, it's this person, it's this person, there's so much concrete evidence for so many different scenarios, and there's and there's so much evidence of it being done with inside the house, too, that it's... that's why, again, it's a cold case.
Yeah, I mean, right away when you talk about there being numerous unidentified DNA and prints of multiple males and stuff, like, that makes you think that, oh, yeah, that supports the evidence that maybe it was the folks from the ransom, because they're talking about it's a group of people. But I don't know.
I know. Now, this is something kind of talking about that. So Dr. Henry Lee, the same DNA expert who testified in the O.J. Simpson trial, told the case of JonBenet Ramsey that the DNA found in JonBenet Ramsey's underwear may not be from an intruder or from outside members of the family. Now, he explained that some DNA may be from saliva from someone who manufactured or packaged the underwear, or from the store where it was purchased, like from employees working there, customers shifting through it. So the only thing he says this tells is that maybe the Ramseys didn't wash the underwear before she put it on.
Yeah, so, which can, it's a common thing. And you said it's touch DNA, right? Yeah. So that it doesn't seem like it'd be admissible in court.
Yeah. And what's crazy about this case, which we'll talk about with looking at suspects and everything, is the DNA not matching people has gotten so many people off in this case. Mm-hmm. When there's so many DNA special, like, it wasn't just Dr. Henry, there was multiple that have come forward saying, like, this could have just been from packaging, this doesn't say anything, but people are really focused on this DNA. And again, I understand, because that's how we solve cases now, but I just wanted to say that, because I think that's a really important thing.
It is.
Yeah. So the Ramsey's mansion was located in an area with more than 100 burglaries in the weeks and months before JonBenet's death. The community also had a seemingly high concentration of sex offenders. They had 38 registered sex offenders living within 2 miles of their house the time of the murder.
Wow.
38 within 2 miles.
That's insane. That's a lot.
Yeah. And I really tell everyone, there is a website you can go on and see where the sex offenders live, because they are supposed to register, and I highly, highly, highly suggest you do it. It's terrifying to see how many there are, and not all of them are from, you know, if you pee in public, even, you can get that put on your record, but it is something I highly, especially if you're a parent, suggest doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, for sure. Police discovered one door of the Ramsey home was unlocked, and there was also 2 windows that were left ajar that allowed Christmas cords to be put outside, you know, kind of like during Christmas when you want to plug things inside type of deal. So there was a broken window in the basement where near JonBenet was found. Now, John Ramsey did state he did break that window a month earlier when he locked himself outside the house, but he just hadn't had a chance to fix it yet. Near the window was a suitcase placed by it from inside, so it was almost like a stepping stool that could have been used to get out of the window. The Ramseys did state this was out of place. They said this wasn't something that they put there. So the Ramseys first stated the suitcase was not theirs. However, the suitcase did later on, like years later, it sounds like the suitcase was actually been told to belong to John Andrew, which was his older son. But the things inside were very unnerving, so I want to talk about the things that were inside of this, because I do think it was a huge piece of evidence that a lot of people overlook. Now, on top of the suitcase, there was a tiny piece of glass, almost like there was glass from the window shards, or showing like, oh, it must not been like John Ramsey saying, hey, this wasn't here, maybe that was something that happened during a break-in. Now, inside of the suitcase was a Dr. Seuss book, along with a duvet cover containing fibers of the clothes that JonBenet was wearing the night she was murdered, which indicate she may have been put into that suitcase to possibly remove the body. Because how would fibers from her clothes be inside of that suitcase? Now, this is kind of a thing I'll say, but it's kind of gross. But the blanket that was inside was covered in old dry semen. So when they searched the semen, it actually belonged to the brother John Andrew, the older brother. Now, John Andrew, So John Andrew, he had an alibi. There's no evidence showing he did it. The only evidence is that this was his blanket when he was in college, and maybe it was used at the crime, but he was just a normal college student. Let's just say that.
Yeah, that was my immediate thought. I'm like, he's a young man.
Yeah, he's a young man. Good for him having a good time.
With blankets around.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's leave the poor blanket alone.
Exactly. Poor guy. Poor guy, that's what's, but it's important to know that. Yeah. So leaves and packing peanuts were found in the grate area around the window. Now leaves and packing peanuts and glass were actually found on the suitcase and on the floor around the suitcase. So leaves, packing peanuts. And those were brought there. So not the leaves, obviously, but the packing peanuts. Now, the leaves and the foliage around the grate were disturbed, but there is a note that there was cobwebs on the window, and they were not disturbed. Isn't this annoying?
It really is. You start thinking like, oh, okay, I have an idea. Oh, nope, squashed.
Every single time. That's the thing about this, when people are like, oh, they got through the window. It's like, well, it's a small, you know, it's like a normal basement window. Even if you're the tiniest person, you're going to disturb the cobwebs. You're going to disturb all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's like those, the narrow rectangle, right?
Yeah.
Basement, yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. And another thing, too, it did snow a little bit. It was kind of a warmer winter in Colorado, but there wasn't any footprints or anything in the snow showing, like, someone trying to get in and out of it, either.
There would clearly be a disruption in the snow around it. I mean, we know.
Absolutely.
We're snow experts.
Exactly, we're Minnesotans. But it's like, how, why is everything disturbed around it? It's almost like a ghost did this. Mm-hmm. It honestly, I'm gonna put that, this is who did it. A ghost killed Chaminade. All right. So there was a flashlight that the Ramsey said did not belong to them, like a really heavy duty, thick flashlight that was on the counter. There was also a canvas bag not belonging to the Ramseys that was found in a crawl space in the home.
Okay.
Now, something they said did not belong to them in the crawl space.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a partial book print, I mean, boot print, not book print, a partial boot print was found on top of the toilet tank in the northeast bathroom in the basement near the crawl space. So there was a little boot print mm-hmm. from a high-tech boot near the crawl space.
Okay.
So it could have been a point of entry, or it could have been where someone stayed in there, you know, planned all this, who knows?
Yeah.
But that was there.
I mean, I guess, the crawl space didn't have a window, right?
No. Nope. So
they could have just been hiding out.
Yep. And, I mean, the Ramseys were, and we'll talk about a couple of the people that were at the party and stuff, but, I mean, the night before, they were having parties. Friends were over. They were very influential in the neighborhood, and they would invite people to do tours. Because, you know, they live in a bank. They're rich.
Yeah.
And they would decorate their house beautifully. So they would have people come in and do tours of their house. Mm-hmm. And you could just walk into these people's houses. Because it was the 90s, because, of course, you could.
Yeah.
In the 90s. And so, it could, you know, there's so much evidence pointing towards it being an inside job, but it's very likely that someone, if they just scouted out a little bit, could have figured out how to stay in there if they really wanted to.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been that hard.
No. In the wine cellar where Jean-Benet's body was found, police discovered a high-tech boot print and a red pocket knife, neither of which belonged to the Ramseys. Well, they said didn't belong to them. And I like to say allegedly, and they said, I always want to say what the Ramseys said and take that as fact for now, and then we can go through that. Another shoe print was found indicating that there was two people, like there's possibly two people with like a high-tech boot that could have been. It was such a small amount of boot prints, and they did have like electrical work and stuff, you know, done weeks prior, but it could have been a perpetrator. This is something to note. A neighbor did find a latex glove in the trash can in their alley. There was nothing put back that connected it, but a neighbor did find that and make a note of it. Now, on December 23rd in 1996, so a few days before, someone did call the police from the Ramsey home, and then they hung up without saying a word. The family did write this off, but some have suggestions that something might have been happening at that time, but who knows, could have been a butt dial. And not a butt dial, I guess there wasn't cell phones, could have been someone messing around like that, so.
Prankster.
So, yeah, a little prank. They're pranking. Burke's pranking over there.
Interesting.
Okay. So we'll talk about John and Patsy Ramsey because they're the ones that a lot of people like to go for, and we'll talk a little bit about why that is, and we'll go through the ransom note a little bit because this is important. Now, the original detective, Linda Arndt, the one that was there alone for most of the time, was the only detective at the scene for hours and gave an interview with ABC News about 3 years after the death, stating she knew who killed JonBenet. She knew she was in the home with the murderer as soon as John Ramsey carried up the body from the basement. She also believed they would never be charged with the murder. So it's a very bold statement.
Yeah.
Very bold statements. Now, I did find an FBI profile of, because, you know, there are, is this a job I would absolutely love, is profiling murderers or, you know, that would just be an amazing job. But they made a note that sex offenders never leave ransom notes or ask for money. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just something that never happens. Also, kidnappers never molest a child in the home and then leave the victim behind. So I'm going to start with a little evidence of the murder being done within inside the family. So obviously there was limited evidence of forced entry. There was no footprints found outside, even though it snowed, which we talked about. There is limited DNA evidence, most of which was trace DNA. So there was obviously evidence of the family, but they didn't really say that as anything because, of course, there's going to be fingerprints of the family everywhere. Now, this is the scary part. So multiple tools from inside the home were used. So that homemade garrote was actually from Patsy's own paintbrush from inside the house. And portions of the set from that were placed back in the tray. So whoever did this took Patsy's paint set, made a garrote, and put other pieces into the tray. And put it back.
And then put it back,
in the spot it was. Yep, so that's a little weird.
Yeah, makes you think they cared about the items used to put it away.
Exactly, or we're not thinking about someone thinking that being weird. Mm-hmm. Now, the knots on the garrote were very complex. They were not normal knots, which John had learned when he was in Navy training. Mm-hmm. So that would be something he would be very, very familiar with. Now, the ransom note was written on a pen and paper from inside of the house. It was actually their pen and paper that this ransom note was written on. Yes. Not only that, there was a copy that was written on and thrown in their trash can. So almost like they tried to do like a starting one and then threw a piece of paper
in the trash.
And they put the pen and paper. Yeah. And then put the pen and paper back. Yeah, in the place.
That's sus. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, let's say it was an intruder gone wrong, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to write a ransom note, and then I'm like, oh, I'm going to put it back, and I'm going to throw it. Like, who cares?
Yeah,
like,
you don't give a shit. It's not your house.
No, you don't give
time
a shit.
Time is of the essence, typically.
Exactly. It was very slow and sought out. Now, a rope in a brown paper bag was found under the guest bedroom's bed. Fibers from that rope were used to make the garrote found in JonBenet Ramsey's bed. So there was fibers from a rope found on the garrote and in JonBenet Ramsey's bed that was also found under the guest bedroom bed.
So some of this shit it was not confined to the basement.
No, it was multiple places in the house. There was a fiber found on the duct tape that was on her mouth used to bind the child, and that was also found on Patsy's clothing. So a lot of people said, you know, when they brought the body up, obviously Patsy kind of laid or went on top.
Yeah.
So it could have transferred then, but it is a little suspicious.
Yeah.
Just wanted to say that out there. Yeah. So... Now, a lot of people say that who believe that the Ramseys did it connected to the Ramsey note. I mean, not the Ramsey note, but the note that ransom note that was in the Ramsey's house. So the notepad and pen, obviously, in the draft were found. An incomplete copy was found. Specialists believe it would have taken at least 21 minutes to write the note. And that's if you were doing it quick. So someone sat in the house for at least 21 minutes writing this note. Now, handwriting experts did rule out John and Burke, but they could not rule out Patsy's. There was over 200 similarities between Patsy's and the random ransom note. Now, if you're like me, I like to look at that stuff, so there is copies of Patsy writing it and copies of the original together. I highly suggest looking at them. They said it was inconclusive and they couldn't rule her out, but there was a lot of things where like an E was connected to an L in every single one, like a certain way and stuff like that. So
yeah, I want to see that.
Yep. So I'll post that too.
Please do.
On our Instagram, or at least a place to get it. the 118,000 that we were talking about, how that seems small, right? Mm-hmm. So the 118,000 requested for the ransom note was nearly identical to the bonus that John Ramsey received that year as a Christmas bonus.
Interesting.
Yes. So it's like the person knew.
Yeah.
The exact amount that he got for a Christmas bonus mm-hmm. that year.
Mm-hmm.
The impersonal nature of the notes, they never called JonBenet Ramsey by her name, but they kept saying, your daughter, your daughter, mm-hmm. your daughter, which is usually done by someone if they're actually close to the person and trying to think of them more of an object or trying to kind of put their focus away mm-hmm. from it. The note was signed SBTC, which experts connected to, and this is kind of a stretch, but I do want to say it because it's out there. So SBTC, John Ramsey was in a naval training center called Suvai Bay Training Center that would go by the initials SBTC.
Interesting.
And he actually had a picture of it in his office.
Yeah. That's worth noting.
Yeah. So during the 911 call, Patsy claimed she only read that first few sentences and started freaking out, you know, didn't really read the whole thing. It was actually John that read it immediately. Mm-hmm. But when on the 911 call, and you can listen to this, they asked, who wrote the letter? Who wrote the letter? And she's like, I don't know. And then all of a sudden, she went, SBTC victory. Now, that could mean, hey, you know, obviously maybe she just went to the end really quick and saw it. But she said it backwards, because in the note, it was victory SBTC, not SBTC victory, which means it was probably from
memory.
Mental note.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it could be something, it couldn't, but it is suspicious.
Yeah.
Now, this is from Detective Arndt's report. Now, she said according to Patsy Ramsey's timeline, it took that 15 to 20 minutes to call the police, and she started calling family friends first. And she said John's behavior was not upset or distraught, but almost cordial and very polite and kind of quiet.
Yeah.
And almost like Patsy and John, you know, being in a separate room, like they were almost like not mad at each other, but that they were trying to almost stay away from each other on purpose. Now, in the ransom note, the kidnappers gave the Ramseys a specific time to call, and she noted this. Detective noted that John was gone. Like, that 90 minutes, he was just, like, playing with paperwork. He said he had to go get mail. You know, just, like, things you wouldn't be doing if your daughter's kidnapped.
No, no. And, like, oh, I forgot butter at the store. Be right back.
Yeah, And if someone's like, oh, and you haven't found your daughter's body, oh, I'm going to call at 10, you're going to be sitting by that phone the entire time waiting for them to call.
Yeah.
So she did say that. Detective Arndt recorded that John and Patsy were barely in the same room, and he was actually in the den the whole time, and when she couldn't find him, and he kept going through mail. Like, he was reading mail and doing all these things. Now, when Detective Arndt started talking to them and saying, like, hey, who do you think could have done this? Like, let's get some people. Like, do you have an enemy? Everything like that. Patsy immediately said their housekeeper. And then John Ramsey said a former employee. So they immediately both had different people. And it was, like, on the top of their head. Like, oh, this is the person that did it. Oh, this is the person mm-hmm, that did it. Mm-hmm. Which, I don't know. Again, everyone has different trauma responses. Everyone acts differently with that. But she noted that as a little suspicious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, this is one that bothers me the most. I don't know why, but we'll see how you feel about it. At 1:40, less than an hour after JonBenet's body was discovered, John Ramsey started calling his private pilot to get a plane out of Colorado to Atlanta that night to get to a business meeting.
What the fuck, dude?
Less than an hour.
I don't understand. I don't understand that. It just shows.
And
I can't guarantee how I would act if I found my daughter, but I sure as hell would not be booking business meetings. I would quit my job. I would be done.
You would quit. And a lot of people are saying, like, his excuse, and a lot of people that are kind of the pro Ramses, which I'm not pro or for, you know, I'm nothing. I'm making this no opinion. I'm just stating the facts. Mm-hmm. Are saying, like, he is a rich businessman, and a lot of rich businessmen are a little psychopathic. Mm-hmm. There's a reason that they're on top, these CEOs of these large companies. But again, you're still a parent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it's, I don't know. not really an excuse. So around 2:30, about 1.5 hours after JonBenet's body was found, John and Patsy hired their lawyers to seek counsel. So it was 1:40, less than an hour. He's trying to get out of there. And then by 2:30, they were already both lawyered up.
I mean, I get needing to lawyer up.
Again, it's rich people shit.
Yeah, yeah.
It's rich people shit,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because I'm not rich people, but still, that's a really rich people shit. And I don't want to push it over aside, but that would be my least amount what's in my head. Like, obviously, parents are always going to be the first person, and obviously you need protection. There's nothing against. Lawyer up all the time. Lawyer up on everything, everybody. Like, that's a main thing. Don't talk and lawyer up.
Yeah, yeah.
But, man, I don't know. That just
what, you got a little time.
Hour and
it's
a half.
It's not like there's a time limit to lawyering up. I mean, your daughter was just found. You need to. I mean, your daughter was found in your own fucking house. You need to lawyer up. I get that. But right away? Right away.
So, other random behavior to note and other clues that I found that I actually did not know before was that Patsy claimed the underwear that JonBenet was wearing did not belong to JonBenet, even to the point of making a scene. Like, when the body came up, she's like, those were not the underwear. She wasn't wearing those underwear. Like, she was, like, freaking out about it, like, kind of obnoxiously.
Yeah.
Now, the underwear was too big for JonBenet, and people, including the detectives, put that as a sign of the intruder. But later, a receipt was found showing Patsy did indeed buy that pair of underwear from Bloomingdale's, New York, for her niece as a gift, who was larger than JonBenet. Now, Patsy's family had heard before the murder that JonBenet threw a fuss because she wanted that same underwear. Like, Mom, I want those too. So Patsy put that pair of underwear on the top shelf in JonBenet's closet for when she got older.
Interesting. Okay.
So did she just forget? Was that something she was supposed to wear? Maybe JonBenet put it on to feel fancy and wear her brand new underwear. Who knows? But kind of a strange little thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's worth noting.
Yeah. Yep. JonBenet was also an avid bedwetter, including sometimes soiling herself at the age of 6, 7, which is very unusual. It's kind of an age where you get over that.
Yeah.
Now, that is textbook behavior for a child that is experiencing sexual trauma.
Yeah.
With the autopsy obviously showing sexual assault over a period of time, that's not a big thing there, but that is to note that 91% of child sexual abuse is by someone inside the home and someone who's a trusted family member.
Yep.
So it's always someone you would never expect. So I do want to put that out there.
Yeah. Yep. Statistics.
One really strange thing that was also noted was Patsy had on full makeup, like really good makeup, and she had on the same exact dress she was wearing the night before,
mm-hmm.
indicating that she didn't go to sleep.
Maybe.
Yeah.
That might be a stretch. Maybe. Maybe not.
Yeah.
I've gone to sleep with full makeup and what I'm wearing.
Now, the Ramseys were reluctant to cooperate with the police. Now, they later said this was because they feared the police would not conduct a full investigation and target them as easy suspects. Now, that is understandable. I don't know, because if I was a parent, again, I keep saying if I was a parent, I don't want to judge them. I would want to be off the subject list as quick as possible, suspect list as quick as possible. So I would cooperate 100% so they would look past me and hurry up with the other stuff. But
yeah. Do whatever you need to do to clear me and get to the right person.
Exactly. They even refused to talk to police right away, and they refused to give a polygraph test.
What?
Yes. So on January 1st, 1987, so 1 week after JonBenet Ramsey was murdered, John and Patsy flew to Atlanta, Georgia, and gave their first TV interview with CNN before they even talked to police. Now, this interview was widely criticized because Patsy did seem kind of out of it. I do tell people you should look at it. It is a mother and a father, obviously, that could be grieving and stuff like that. But there's this thing, I don't know why this is everywhere, saying that Patsy was heavily medicated, but you know what? I'd be heavily medicated too, so I'm not judging a mama.
So, yeah. No, exactly. No, I would need to be.
But it is weird they did that before they did anything. They hired a PR team, even, the whole thing. So on April 30th, 1997, more than 4 months after JonBenet was murdered, the police conducted their first interview with John and Patsy Ramsey. Took 4 months. The Patsys immediately requested also copies of their statements after this, and that has been criticized because it's unheard of. I mean, why do you need copies of what you said to collaborate your story later, to say the same thing later? It was something that wasn't.
Yeah, that's weird.
Wasn't brought with. I mean, I guess it didn't make them look good, is what I'm trying to say.
No,
so, it doesn't. Not at all. January 15th, 1998. Now, this is over a year after JonBenet Ramsey was murdered. Her parents declined to participate in a second interview with detectives. So it took them 4 months, and then they decided, I'm not going to help anymore, saying they wouldn't cooperate unless the police allow them to review the evidence in the case. Personally.
Yeah, because it's been so long, they fucking forgot what they said. They forgot everything.
Yep. Who knows, though? you think the Patsys? I'm gonna see if you're gonna switch. You might switch. Okay. Now around, maybe you won't though. Around the time the Ramsey's former housekeeper, now Linda Hoffman Pugh, she is a very, very big person in this. We'll talk a little bit about her later. This she spent 8 hours with a grand jury stating she knew for sure Patsy had killed JonBenet. Now she told the grand jury that she became moody around Christmas in 1996. She quoted, I think she had multiple personalities. She'd be in a good mood, and then she'd be cranky. She got into arguments with JonBenet about wearing a dress or about a friend coming over. I had never seen Patsy so upset. I don't believe Patsy meant to kill her. I truly believe it was an accident. Now, she said about the Swiss Army knife that was found that it was Burke's. Even though the Patsys say it wasn't, the housekeeper said it was. And she said, only Patsy would have put that knife there. I took it away from Burke and hid it in a linen closet near JonBenet's bedroom. An intruder never would have found it. Patsy would have found it getting out the clean sheets. Hmm. What the housekeeper said about the rope and about the blanket that was on JonBenet, this is another quote. The blanket wrapped around JonBenet's body was left in the dryer when she left work. There was still a Barbie doll nightgown clinging to that blanket, the one that was next to JonBenet. Mm-hmm. So it had to come out of the dryer recently. Only Patsy would have known it was in the dryer.
End Interesting. Quote. Interesting.
Yep. So this was in 1999. Now in 1999, the Boulder grand jury voted to indict the Ramseys on charges of child abuse resulting in their daughter's death. So not for the murder, but in charges resulting in the daughter's death. And it did go through. It was former DA Alex Hunter who would not sign the indictment, stating that the grand jury had completed its time and did not have sufficient evidence to convict the Ramseys. Now, I also do want to note that the former DA Alex Hunter was known to be close to the Ramsey family and is an ongoing feud with detectives about this case.
Can we dismiss him? You're too close to the family. You're too close. Come on.
Yeah, it's a small area.
Why does it all have to be so fucking complicated?
Everything in this case is complicated. Now, Patsy Ramsey died of ovarian cancer in 2006. Now, 2 years later, the DA did make a public statement apologizing to the family Ramsey and exonerating John and Patsy of any wrongdoing. They did this after clearing the Ramseys due to DNA evidence.
Okay.
So they're no longer suspects as of 2008, according to the Colorado Boulder Police. But I will say the detectives on the case, and we'll talk a little bit about them, that are still on it today. Mm-hmm. They're very biased. I'm going to say they are biased that the Ramseys did it, mm-hmm. which can affect. You shouldn't be biased as a detective on mm-hmm. anything when yeah. it comes to this case. Yeah. You gotta be objective. But according to documents, there was even a statement apologizing to them 2 years after Patsy passed away for treating them the way they did in the media. So
they were exonerated with this DNA evidence. Was this new DNA evidence?
Yep, this is the DNA evidence, the trace, the only DNA evidence they had. But, like I said, Like, I think it was Hunter. I could be wrong. Apologize if it is. The one that did the O.J. Simpson trial.
Yeah, the MD.
He's a very, he's very, very famous on the case. He said, but that DNA evidence could have been a warehouse worker. It was so small in the type that it was. So a lot of people are exonerated in this case because the evidence, and a lot of people, including the Colorado police, are writing on this evidence. I mean, this DNA evidence. So I do want to put that out there. You're going to be hear a lot of people that are exonerated about this, but by that, but that is something that's highly criticized, as it should be.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. I think so. So I'm going to tell the theory of what people believe. Now, I'm not saying this happened because it's a theory, but I do want to say the theory of what people put together if the Ramseys did it. Now, the theories was that JonBenet Ramsey continuously wet her bed, which upset Patsy, making her lose her temper and accidentally hurting JonBenet. Now, John and Patsy decided to cover it up together, hence the overstaged murder scene, the multiple murder weapons, the moving of the body, the messing of the evidence, the letter written inside the house, etc. Now, Patsy's family and friends, including her son Bert, continuously state that Patsy was always calm and barely even raised her voice to her kids. No, the only person that said she did was the housekeeper. So, and the housekeeper could have a grudge. I mean, that was the first person that Patsy said, you know, this is the person I think did it. But
true. But the housekeeper could also be around them more than other family and friends. I mean, this housekeeper's probably going to be there quite often and see them when they're not at their best.
Absolutely. So that's the theory that most people, I'm going to say this is probably the most popular theory about what happened to her. Accident got wrong. And that's the next theory we talk about, or conspiracy involving the Ramsey family, goes to the suspect being Bert Ramsey, JonBenet's 9-year-old brother at the time. Now, Bert Ramsey was never formally a suspect in his sister's murder, yet Bert Ramsey is actually probably the favorite suspect of skeptics of the family, and in a 2016 documentary by CBS, by investigators, by police, they actually insisted that Bert killed his sister. So this was on the news, like, all the evidence, all points towards Bert killing the sister. Now, Bert did sue CBS for defamation of character in 2016 of a sum of $750 million, and he actually won it in court. I don't know how much they settled in, but Bert did win that with, you know, being older. So I'm gonna say the theories and conspiracies, and then we'll talk a little bit about the evidence from there about why people think this is. Now, the theory was that Bert was jealous of his sister JonBenet due to the attention she received from pageants and actually hurt her. Or that Bert got up during the night to play with some of his new Christmas toys, which he admitted he did. And then he made a play too rough with her, which is very common for brothers and sisters. Now, the family decided after seeing this to help him cover it up because obviously they don't want to lose two kids. Now, again, it's very connected to, you know, staging the murder, the evidence, everything like that. This would also explain the pineapple in JonBenet's system and on the counter, because the only fingerprints that were on the bowl were Bert's fingerprints. There was none from JonBenet. Now, theorists believe that they may have had a snack together that night. And Patsy and John Ramsey say over and over again that the kids never had pineapple. They never got up that night. And that was a bowl from the intruder. Yet, it was pineapple in her system, and yet Burke's fingerprints were all over it.
Yeah, let's just go to murder this kid and let's bring some pineapple.
that's
a stretch, but okay.
And why are they so insistent on it? Like the pineapple thing, it's that's the Ramseys are so like, no, we did not give them pineapple, and maybe they didn't. So that's the theory, that Burke was up, JonBenet was up, because obviously she had pineapple in her system, and that he could have done it. Now, another thing too is, and I want people to listen to this, because I have listened to the 911 call so many times this last month. So at the end of the 911 call, like a lot, Patsy believed that she hung up the phone, but she didn't. Now, there is some voices in the background. So remember, Burke was supposed to be asleep this whole time. Supposed to be slept the whole time. The cops came in, even shined a light. He was asleep the whole time. So skeptics are hearing this, and I'll have everyone please listen to this. Most people believe it's saying this, but I couldn't hear it, but I do want to state it. So there was a male voice in the background, an adult male voice, that sounded angry after the call was supposed to be hung up and said, "We're not speaking to you." And then it was a female who who is believed to be Patsy, saying, "Help me, Jesus, help me, Jesus." And then there was a young male, like a young kid, that said, "What did you find?" So I'll say it again. Angry male voice, "We're not speaking to you." Female, "Help me, Jesus, help me, Jesus." Young male, "What did you find?" Question mark. So it's believed that that could have been Bert, that maybe he was awake, maybe something happened that he was involved with, and the family was trying to help him.
Yeah.
Type of deal. So, again, speculation, but want to put that out there.
Yeah.
So, since it's all theories and 911 calls can be altered and you hear what you want, I'm going to say the facts. And these facts are from Chief Investigator Kohler. He's very much on the side of Burke doing it, but I want to say the facts. And he's an investigator and he's a very, very smart man. So, I'm gonna state these things. So, the mark on JonBenet that is believed to be a stun gun was consistent with a mark from one of his toy trains. So he was using, like, toys and, like, trying to make, and it was very consistent with the marks that could have been a stun gun, which they didn't know if it was a stun gun or not. Now, Burke had hit JonBenet with a golf club earlier, which resulted in her having an ER visit.
Recently?
Recently.
Okay.
Before the murder. Now, according to Kohler's investigation, in the 24 months before the death, this is insane. She visited the doctor 18 times, mainly the ER, for having marks on her. And Patsy would say, "Oh, it's just bonking herself in the eye," or "she fell down." 18 times in 24 months.
That's insane.
Yep.
That's a lot. That's like my sister a lot.
Yeah. Are you abusing your sister? Spoiler alert,
she goes to the ER a lot. Because she has headaches.
She's all
fine. The point is she's fine.
She's fine. So then I make it dark. I'll write now the dark. Laugh. Ha ha. Sexual abuse. Chronic sexual abuse of JonBenet. Now, this is a big one towards Bert, because she was found assaulted with a paintbrush, which was believed to be a paintbrush. But there was no semen and no proof of penile penetration was confirmed. This is consistent with young predators, according to this detective. Because usually someone who acts out when they're a young child, it's usually not with their private parts. It's usually, you know, with objects. Exactly. Now, JonBenet's body was found in the basement, which was known to be Burke's domain and often where he played with his friends. Like, it wasn't a place the family really hung out. It's an unfinished basement. It's kind of dirty, but that's where he'd play with his toys and kind of have his little play spot. Now, a previous housekeeper named Geraldine Vidicka reported that Burke was known to smear feces all over. Now, CSIs have written finding a pair of pajamas at the bottom of JonBenet's closet that had smears of his feces all over it, including she had like a box of candy that she got as a gift, and her brother smeared his feces inside of it.
Oh.
Like, he didn't like his sister, or he was angry. I don't know. But very strange. He was known to do that. He was 9 years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what is their age difference again?
She six, and then he is nine.
Okay.
Six, seven, yeah.
Okay.
So Bert's baseball bat was found outside of the home. Now, there was red carpet fibers from the basement carpet found on this bat, meaning it recently had been in the basement. Now, this wouldn't be a big deal because he played in the basement, but the big deal is there was no fingerprints found in the bat, and it was completely wiped clean. That implies that bat might have been the murder object.
Sure, yeah.
So, because why would it be clean if you're playing with it?
Yeah, and she had been hit, and we don't know what she was hit with, right?
Yeah, it's believed that that was one of them if Burke did it, but it's also believed that really heavy-duty, because it's the same kind of mark, it could have been from that flashlight. That really that was found on the counter that the Ramseys insisted 100% was not theirs.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to note some behaviors. So, Burke did go to a lot of therapists and child psychologists during this whole thing, and these interviews are online, and they're very interesting to watch. So, Burke's behavior with the interviews is one reason why people believe that, you know, he possibly could have something to do with it. So, when asked the interview, they asked him, "How have things been since your sisters died?" And Burke responded, "It's been okay." The most eerie line from the interview was when the doctor asked Burke if he had any secrets, to which he replied, probably, if I did, I wouldn't tell you, because then it wouldn't be a secret.
Well, he's not wrong.
Yeah, he's not wrong, right? And he is a 9-year-old boy, so. When asked to draw a picture of his family, JonBenet was not at the picture at all. Now, the doctor put this as weird, considering it was only 13 days since JonBenet has passed away. And when asked to draw a picture of his family, he didn't include her. Mm. Again.
Yeah. Take it or leave it.
Yep. During JonBenet's funeral, it was reported that Burke was smiling and hopping around playing with toys. He didn't seem to cry or seem upset. He has had, like, a lot of energy.
Okay, that's a little weird.
Yeah. But I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to 100% tell everyone to watch this interview. So he's only done one interview his entire life. It was actually recent. And he did it with Dr. Phil talking about this. It's a great interview, and I highly suggest looking at it, because a lot of people will say this about Burke. Now, people believe his behaviors are a tell, but I want to make a point that you don't know how you're going to react in a traumatic experience, and you can tell that there is something with him. Now, a lot of people are saying it's neurological behaviors, or maybe he's on the spectrum, could be an explanation of why, but I found zero evidence of any, like, diagnosis. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to say that. You can, yeah, he's a weird dude, but I'm a weird chick. Yeah. So I do want to put that out there, but please watch that interview. Mm-hmm. A lot of people say bad things about him. Yeah, this theory could totally be right. It makes sense with a lot of the evidence, but he's just could just be a different type of dude.
Kid that went through a lot of shit.
Exactly. So, again, according to the Boulder investigators, Burke was never considered a subject, and this is all theories, and all the evidence against him is circumstantial. Sure. Mm-hmm. Again, DNA. So, I'm going to start now away from the Patsy family. Now that we talked about them, we talked about how their involvement could be, and talk about everything that's there. Now, have you ever heard of John Mark Carr? Do you remember this guy? Or girl?
No, I don't. Mm-mm.
Okay, this face is probably the most popular one besides the Ramses that came up as a suspect, and I'll tell you why. I don't know what to gender them, and I'll tell you why an example. So John Mark Carr allegedly came out as transgender and changed her name to Alexis Valerian Reich. Now, I don't want to give this person any respect, but in respect of her, like, trans brothers and sisters, I'm going to try to avoid dead naming Carr. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, and refer to the pronouns of she is and her in this interview. Now, I want to say it's a possible dead name, and you're going to understand this. I don't know if John Mark Carr is now Alexa Valerian Reich, and I'll explain why. Now, we'll start in 2001. Reich was living with her wife, two children, and working as a school teacher at the time in Napa Valley, California. Now, her house was raided after being accused of the 1997 murder of a 12-year-old Georgia Lee Morris. During the raid, police found child pornography on her computer, and she was immediately arrested. When the prosecutor failed to create a case against her, Reich fled to London, where she stayed for 5 years. Now, Reich's family presumed she was dead. Completely, just fell off the face of the earth. Until around 2006, when she confessed to the murder of JonBenet Ramsey, thanks to the documentarian Michael Tracy. Now, Tracy was in contact with Reich for 4 years, exchanging emails, sharing what she believed was anonymous fantasies and secrets of hers. Now, Tracy said this was the hardest thing he ever had to do, because dealing with the mind of this person, but felt that he had to do it to create a case, if this was the case. Now, in 2006, Reich was found hiding in Thailand, working as an elementary school teacher and a part-time clown. So, so this person with a history of sexual abuse, a possible murder suspect, left her family, was in 2006 working as an elementary school teacher and claiming to have killed JonBenet.
Started a whole new life.
Now, yes. So Reich claimed to have drugged JonBenet, but the autopsy didn't find any drugs in her system. Reich provided no details, in which were not provided publicly. And according to detectives, Reich was not even in the area at the time. Okay. The DNA did not match. Now, in 2007, Reich was arrested for assaulting her elderly father, Rex. Now, she pleaded no contest to the charges and was ordered to attend anger management classes. Later that year, she was investigated for her alleged role in a sex cult involving teenage girls and later reemerged in 2015. Now, this is what's gross about this sex cult. Reich was in jail and was creating a sex cult with a pen pal called the Immaculates, and they were looking for children that looked like JonBenet Ramsey lookalikes.
Oh, gross.
Yeah. Pretty garbage piece of shit. So, where is Reich now? So, she has currently written a paper on a Thai champagne in which she was quoted, "I like my my sparkling wine just like I like my women, vintage and by the age of six, smooth."
Oh, no.
Yes.
Come on.
Just a piece of shit. She also runs a website, and I don't want anyone to go to this. I've done the research for you. Please do not give this person the clicks, but I've done the research because I found this website. So she runs a website called johnmarkcarr.com. And please do not go to this website. I'll tell you what it says. This website is a rambling of a mentally ill person who is still claiming involvement. Now, it's filled with not only pictures of JonBenet, but those of other small children that have been murdered. The latest, like on the main screen, is a long rambling playing a victim role. Like saying she's the victim in this, saying the public is trying to make her seem like she's crazy and she never wanted the fame. That she did give evidence that the investigation did not know, and she didn't know why they lied to the public saying she wasn't involved.
What? Yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of like back and forth. Just like it's a very strange, very strange person. So these are a few quotes from the page. "I was with JonBenet Ramsey when she died. Her death was accidental. That was not a confession of murder. My brother and father were with my grandmother when she died. That doesn't mean they killed her."
Okay.
Yeah. And the reason I say allegedly came out as transgender, because at the beginning, when all this went down, Reich's ex-girlfriend said the car changed her name to Reich and switched genders to avoid detection from police. So, and then after news broke Reich's whereabouts, she immediately started using the name Carr again. And on the website, it's like sometimes she goes by Carr.
And sometimes
Reich. And then some by Reich. So I think it's just a lot of mental illness going on here. I think it's someone, I don't know, that wanted fame, someone that's obviously known to be a child predator, someone who's obviously has really bad issues. Don't think, obviously, I do not believe this person murdered JonBenet, but is very, very obsessed. And the website is very dark and gross and just trying to play a victim. Like, I'm the victim of the media. I'm the victim because no one believes me. It's like...
And it's one thing, it's not, I mean, to switch between genders, I understand being non-binary. It doesn't sound like that's the case here. It sounds like they are switching when it's convenient, and very odd behavior.
So that is JonMarkcarr Carr. That's a very famous face. It's kind of the face you see every place.
Interesting.
Now, another one is the Santa Claus theory. Now, Bill McReynolds was a town Santa that was frequent around the town during holidays parties and was always at the Ramsey's party. It's like, you know, like a dress-up Santa, kind of like the old grandpa that would be around. Yeah. Now, the relationship between JonBenet and McReynolds was described as extremely close. Now, this particular Christmas in 96, JonBenet had gifted Santa some glitter stardust, is what she called it, and left a personal note to him. Now, he took that as really nice and told JonBenet, "I'm going to give you a special gift after Christmas," which could just be a nice old grandpa, but there's a little bit, some creepy stuff going on. He said, she just happened to be extra special to me. She was thoughtful, a very caring little girl, and she actually gave Santa a present. You can imagine how rare that is. When I die, I'm going to be cremated. I've asked my wife to mix the stardust JonBenet gave me with my ashes. So,
I don't know. I don't know. I just don't know.
Just weird. Yeah.
It is. I don't know.
It's weird.
I mean,
except all of it, I understand. I don't know.
Some older folks connecting with younger kids and just feeling a connection, and it's completely innocent. And but then there's others that are not. I just don't know.
Maybe I'm just this person, but I like no relationships with my child, with any adult that's like even close to weird like this. Like if someone said this about my daughter, I'd be like, and you're never talking
about
it.
Yeah, thinking about it as a mother. Like, yeah, I'd be like,
I don't know.
Red flag it, but.
Yeah. Like I want this gift your kid gave me to be buried with me. Just weird. And then not only during that, he made his wife Janet give him the glitter during his surgery as like good luck. Like he would like carry it with him around. Now, the theory is, according to friends and family, JonBenet was actually telling everybody during the Christmas party, Santa told me he's going to come visit me tonight.
Well, it was...
So...
What day? It was Christmas, though, right? So, not... She might...
Yes. But they already had the presents and stuff. It was like... You know, it was like Christmas night. Like, it's already been done.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah. So, it wasn't like, Christmas Eve. No, I get it. I get what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah. So the theory is that this older gentleman told her, like, hey, at midnight, I'll come over. And he, like, knew the house. He was familiar with it. Opened the door. It wouldn't have been forced entry. She's a little girl. She's excited Santa's going to see her. So that's one of the theory. McReynolds was dismissed as a suspect by police after his alibi for that night of JonBenet's Ramsey from his wife saying that they were having dinner. They also said because he had poor health and that ruled him out of the case. Now, note, one particular strange detail is that McReynolds and his wife Janet were both involved in a similar incident 22 years earlier. So 22 years earlier, their own daughter, on December 26th, was kidnapped.
What? Okay. I feel like I sort of remember this, but it's coming. It's starting to come back.
It's just kind of a creepy thing. And then Janet, the Santa Claus wife, wrote a play that was very similar to the Ramsey case. Like, they're just strange couple.
Post-death or pre?
After death.
Yeah, okay.
After death. So, yeah, you want to just throw it aside. It's a lot of throw aside, but it is a maybe, I guess. But he, again, DNA didn't go with it. He was an older gentleman. But a lot of people do believe, like, if you look on, like, Reddit and stuff, like, if it wasn't the Ramseys, who would it be? And a lot of people point to this man.
Yeah.
So, do I believe it is? I don't think so. But, you know. I know. Right? I told you. The housekeeper. Now, we talked a little bit about her, Linda Hoffman. This was the person that Patsy immediately pointed a finger at. Now, she became immediately suspicious because she was familiar with the home. And also, Patsy, you know, brought up her name. She also asked Patsy around that time if she could borrow around $2,000. So she was kind of tight in money and needed that. She could have been around the house, saw the $118,000 bonus check, maybe, and might have had it laying on the counter. Knew that could be a mouth of ash. Yeah. She cleaned the house. She would know to put stuff away. Just automatically in her head.
Yeah.
Now, also, police found the same brand of duct tape used to cover JonBenet's mouth in Pugh's home.
Is there more than one brand of duct tape?
Now, Patsy and Pugh do seem to keep pointing fingers at each other. Now, when police asked Patsy who could have killed, obviously said Pugh, and then obviously Pugh spent 8 hours with the grand jury. So the evidence is very similar to being in the home with her, but she was a suspect. She did have some things that could be, but again, exonerated by what? DNA. So this person, I'm only going to give a few seconds. There's a few people that believe this person might be a suspect, but I didn't find enough evidence where this person could, but I'll still just put their name out there. Chris Wolf. He was a local reporter and was said to be one of the suspects after his lived-in partner, Jacqueline Dilson, turned him in. Reportedly, she said that he was out all night on Christmas and then came back with like dirty clothes and seemed agitated when he turned on the news and saw the murder the next day. He also possessed a sweatshirt that said SBTC, which stood for Santa Barbara Tennis Club.
Interesting.
So the SBTC. which was at the end of the thing.
Why are there now, so many SBCT acronyms out there?
Yeah.
I'm thinking, and it's also, there's not that many, but apparently there's more than I thought.
And I've looked it up, and there's, like, a cult that kind of goes by it. There's a whole bunch of little things, mm-hmm. but it's a strange one. Now, Wolf's handwriting was also similar to the one in the ransom notes, and it was also another person that the handwriting experts cannot eliminate.
Okay.
Just like Patsy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to say this as this was according to Web Sleuth, so I really tried to get the evidence before I started looking at, like, Reddit and stuff, but I do want to state this because I found it very interesting. So, according to Web Sleuth on Reddit, Wolf had written multiple articles before the death about John Ramsey's company and how he didn't do business well and how he wasn't a good businessman. So he might have had something going on where, you know, he knew of the company, and in the note it said, like, you know, we respect your country, but not the country, we respect your business, not the country it's in, and kind of stuff like that. And it was very similar writing and very similar words to what were used in these articles.
Okay, interesting. So personal vendetta there.
Yeah, so something, but he'd have to be very smart to do all these other things. You'd have to know the house, everything like that, but so that's why I'm just like, I don't think it's this guy, but but yeah, you know. So Chris Wolfe in 2002 actually did sue the Ramseys, because I do recommend reading this book. John and I read it. John and Patsy wrote a book kind of saying who they thought were suspects, kind of their feelings on their case, and his name was brought up a lot in that. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like John and him pointing fingers, like, this guy had a vendetta out for me, mm-hmm. type of deal. Chris Wolfe did sue the Ramseys for defamation of character, and the cops were following him. He was dealing with a lot during all this. Who knows if it was, like, an ex-girlfriend who was just mad at him. We don't know the case, but the judge did throw the case out, and just because he didn't believe it was something that could be won.
Yeah.
So that's Chris Wolfe. Some people believe he did it. He's not a big face out there, but I did want to put that out there.
Sure.
So now Todd Fuss and Michael Helgoth.
God, who are these clowns now?
These clowns. These are clowns. Now
we have had a clown in the story.
We did. An actual clown. So, Helgoth was a mechanic that worked in a junkyard in Boulder, Colorado. Now, Helgoth's colleagues told police that he was bragging to him that him and his partner were going to be making around $50,000 to $60,000 each that Christmas. And the ransom note was asking for $118,000. So, that would make sense. That would be around the amount. Todd Fuss was a criminal, mainly dealing in breaking an entry, and him and Helgoth were pretty close. So, these are two guys that had the capabilities to do that. Now, Fuss and his girlfriend wife. Now, I'm going to say girlfriend and wife because I couldn't find, because some things said it was his wife, some things says it was the girlfriend. They both, even them talking, went back and forth. So I'll just say girlfriend for now.
Okay.
So Fuss's girlfriend, Benice, had a daughter with him named Cinnamon, who was a pageant queen herself. Now, as a family, these two would frequent the same pageants that JonBenet attended, and there's even pictures of these girls in the same pageant.
Interesting.
Yeah. Now, according to Bernice in an interview with Robert Clark, Todd acted inappropriate when he was in these pageants. I'm going to quote her. She said, "I found him leaning on a door frame where some of the older girls were getting dressed, and I said, don't you think that's a little weird and strange when a man is watching these little girls get dressed and putting on makeup?" Mm-hmm. She says, "He started cussing me out and telling me to mind my fucking business."
Please.
She also claimed that he boasted about breaking into houses, and just before Christmas in 1996, he told her he was going to come into some money, and he also put a deposit down on a new truck that he couldn't afford, telling the garage to hold it because he would be able to pay for it after Christmas. Hmm. Now, also around that time, Helgoth was telling his colleagues, like, "Oh, I lost my flashlight. I lost my prized possession," which he claimed to be his torch. Now, obviously, there was that large flashlight, mm-hmm. that was found in the Ramsey's house. One thing that I think is really big in this case, and this is one where I'm like, oh, I watched a documentary on these two as possibly being suspects. They're actually pretty new suspects because of Bernice. Bernice is in jail. This is the girlfriend. She brought it up saying, like, I didn't think of this. I didn't think of all this. I'm like, my daughter Cinnamon was, you know, this was like a jailhouse confession from Bernice talking about Todd and Helgoth. But she said after Helgoth's death, she's like, started looking into this, started looking at pictures, and was like, oh my gosh, she thinks this is connected. Helgoth apparently committed suicide only days after a press conference in 1999 where the DA Alex Hunter claimed that police were closing in the suspects and knew who did it. So he committed suicide like right after that announcement was made on TV. A stun gun and a pair of high-tech boots similar to the prints found at the Ramses, those boot prints, were found near his body. Helga's family also has refused to give a DNA sample.
That's fascinating.
Yep. Todd did give a DNA sample, and he was cleared.
Okay.
But Helga's family, because when someone passed away, you have to have, like, the next of kin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Request it, but they completely refuse. I don't know, police detectives, like, go try to sneak and get the daughter's DNA or something, or whoever alive
was and he see cremated? If it's connected. Can we exhume him?
Oh, maybe you can't. I don't know with touch DNA. Maybe I know with blood DNA you can do that, like if it's like a grandchild or something. Maybe with touch DNA it's different though.
Okay, yeah,
like it has to be the actual person. It can't be a relative, because mm-hmm. that would make sense.
Yeah,
but yeah, the family refused. So
that's maybe interesting. I would earmark that one.
Yep, that's a big one. These two are also another couple of other clowns. There's a lot in this
case. Hate clowns.
I know. I hate clowns. Fuck those clowns. So, Todd and Aaron Shunlow. So, there's a detective that works on this privately. He's actually written a book on this. He's a very interesting fellow, and he kind of brought this up to people. Now, these guys are like in the suspect list, but they're not really a big one. But there's so much similarities, I didn't want to bring them up. So, Todd and Aaron Shunlow, they're brothers. Aaron, who was had a juvenile conviction for sexual assault, had been arrested and jailed for a murder of a 4-year-old Lacey Ruff. Now, Lacey's body was found floating in the Sea of Hawaii in 1993. She died from strangulation, similar to JonBenet. Mm-hmm. Now, it is believed that his brother Todd was involved in the murder after he admitted to a family member that he had done a terrible thing in Hawaii, and he was the one that carried that little girl down to the water. So it sounds like these two brothers may have killed this little girl in 1993 together named Lacey Ruff. Mm-hmm. Now, less than a decade before that, a 7-year-old girl by the name of Tracy Neff was murdered by strangulation near Boulder, Colorado. Now, Tracy was abducted, and only 5 years later, Aaron was charged with sexually assaulting a minor. So wherever these two boys have been, there have been children that have been sexually assaulted by both of them. And there was two murders of two little girls that had very similar deaths to JonBenet, and they were always in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Tracy's murder may be linked to the unsolved murder of JonBenet that took place because it was 25 miles from Tracy's school, as well as the murder of Lacey Ruff in Hawaii, who was connected to these guys that were at the same place. Now, all three victims were girls between the ages of 4 and 7 who were sexually assaulted. All were in strangulation and obviously had the same look. Like, they all were, like, these beautiful young girls, very pretty, blonde. So these three cases this detective have connected, and they're all three open. They all three have not been solved. Another thing which is crazy about this is they did test Todd's DNA, and it came back inconclusive. What does that mean?
It means it's inconclusive.
What does that mean? It's like, what the fuck? Inconclusive. They're, like, focusing so much on the DNA, and then it can come, like... So... Maybe. Again. Now, the last one.
I'm not feeling that last one for some reason.
You're not feeling it?
My gut is not...
Yeah.
It's not going off on that one. I think it's very similar, and I think it could be lumped in. I think they're separate. Especially with how many sex offenders were in that general area of Boulder, too. Like, I think it's coincidence. That's just my opinion.
And also... the small amount that I've seen of these two, they don't seem like they're smart enough to be able to pull off an elaborate thing to make the family look like they're doing it. They'll do a break and an entry to make it seem, I mean, they got caught with the first murder pretty quick, and then the others were open. So it's like, I don't know. So have you been watching the news? Have you heard the name Gary Olivia yet?
No.
Okay. He's one that everyone's putting out there. Like, the case is solved. The case is solved. The case is solved. This is a new thing that's been coming out lately. And we'll talk about that. And talk about why people are saying that. But Gary Olivia is on the news a lot right now. And we'll talk about why and how he could be connected. So, Gary Olivia was a 32-year-old sex offender in Boulder, Colorado. He lived approximately only 10 blocks from the Ramseys. Now, Olivia's high school friend Michael Vail stepped forward recently with an allegation supporting Gary's suspicion. Now, Vail claimed that not long after the murder, a distraught Olivia called him on the phone and confessed to his pal, "He hurt a little girl. I hurt a little girl." He was particularly unsettled by the knots used to fashion a garrote that strangled JonBenet because those same type of knots were used by Olivia to choke out his own mother with a telephone cord right before that. So Michael Vail stated, "I immediately called the Boulder police and told them that I knew about Gary and what he had told me the days earlier. They didn't get back to him. 3 months later, his friend called the police again, asking where the investigation was on his friend Gary, but the police answering machine set up took the tip and they never called him back. He says he has left multiple messages telling him about this." Now, he was arrested, Olivia, was arrested in 2016, and he had hundreds and hundreds of photos of JonBenet on his phone. Like, obsessed. Kind of like Mark Carr, obsessed. In 2020, he was arrested again, and in his backpack, he had a full-on cutout from a magazine of JonBenet Ramsey.
Yeah, clearly obsessed.
Now, he... Yes, which a lot of these... A lot of perverts are. I think... I blame the media for that. I don't blame the media for child molesters and for these people obviously looking at children in a certain way, but I blame the media on how they portray her. I'm letting... putting her face all over the way they did. And it wasn't for finding the killer. It was very much for money. I mean, the family even said, like, "I didn't put these pictures out. These were, like, families that were at these pageants that were selling to these magazines for tens of thousands of dollars of this, for pictures of this little girl."
Yeah, and I can't even think of one photo of her that I've seen that isn't full makeup pageantry. Like, just a normal picture of her. I don't think I've ever seen.
And we won't post a picture of her like that because there's, you know, so many awesome pictures of her as a little girl. Like, her brothers say she's a tomboy. Like, when you find pictures of her, which are very hard to find, they're her of playing and skiing and doing all this stuff. And what they're doing is they're putting these out for perverts like this and magazines pretty much have free material. It's pretty disgusting if you think about it. Now, he was recently charged with 2 counts of sexual exploitation of children and having child pornography, so he is in jail right now, and he's serving a 10-year sentence. Now, Michael Vail explained that he continued to stay in touch with his friend Olivia just in hopes that he would confess. Like, he was just trying to get information and giving it to the police. While in jail recently, Olivia wrote jailhouse letters to Vail confessing to JonBenet's murder. He wrote, "I never loved anyone like I did JonBenet, and yet I let her slip and her head bashed in half and I watched her die. It was an accident. Please forgive me. I mean, please believe me. She was not like the other kids. JonBenet completely changed me and removed all evil from me. I realized I was wrong to kill other kids, yet by accident, she died and it was my fault."
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Is that all that that they have against him, though?
Yes. Yeah, so the Boulder police are aware of this case, and they do have all of this in their possession, but he was cleared by DNA testing.
Yeah. Again. I feel like he might be a case of obsession, false confession.
Yeah.
He's just...
And that's... I mean, all the people, that's all over the newspapers right now. It's all over online. It's like, probably because I'm looking up so much JonBenet stuff, it's all over my Facebook. But I just don't see him as someone, I think he was just obsessed like that other person.
Yeah.
I think he was a sexual predator.
For sure. And now that he's in jail, and what has he got to do anyway? And he's slipping into his fantasy world, you know?
Yeah. Yep, take them all out. I don't believe in the death penalty, except for those people. So you learn that. I'm not a death penalty girl. Mm-hmm. All right.
Hey, weirdos. I'm going to stop you right there because it is time to reveal our secret code word
for our super special secret ghoulish giveaway. And I apologize if you are listening to this in the future or any time past October 31st, 2023, because that means the giveaway has ended and you can just skip forward like a minute and a half or so. And I'm sorry for interrupting. Okay. All right, back to the people that need the details. Here's the code word for the giveaway. It is Sasquatch. Yes, you heard that right. The code word is Sasquatch. If you're familiar, you will know that we had posted on our Instagram and our Facebook about the giveaway. And what you need to do is take that code word, slip it into our DMs on any of our socials, or email it to us at girlsgoneweirdemail@gmail.com, and that will earn you one entry into the giveaway. You can also go to either of our socials and find that giveaway post. You can like it, you can share it, you can comment on it and tag a friend, and those will all earn you additional entries as well. So good luck, and we hope that you win. And now we will return you to your regularly scheduled programming. Enjoy.
Now, I wouldn't be doing a story if I wasn't looking at psychic readings. So I'm obsessed with looking online at, like, channeling and psychic readings.
That was going to be my number one question. Is, hey, exactly. Bitch, did you get into the psychics and the mediums? I want to know what they have to say.
Of course I did. I will probably always do that, especially with cases like this. To believe them or not, there are psychics that have solved cases.
There have.
Mm-hmm. There are. There was psychics that have worked with the FBI to try to solve this. They actually have brought psychics in, but I couldn't find any information. It's been redacted on all the files that I found. So I kind of, which made me sad because I want to see what psychics that came forward in the FBI use said. But what I did was I went online and I found two pretty well-known ones online, and I'll say how to look at them. They're YouTube videos channeling her. I can't say, like, oh, I really trust this psychic or I know this, because I've watched a few of their videos, but I can say, like, these were the top ones that I found with the top following and the ones that seemed to kind of go into this realm. So I'll do two of them. So we'll start with Sloane Bella. Have you ever heard of her? She's pretty popular.
I don't think so.
She's more like she's one of these really famous ones, like celebrity
okay.
type of people. So Sloane Bella. Now, this was from 2019, and this is a channeling she mm-hmm. did. So this is kind of sad, and I'm, again, not saying this is what happened, but this is what Sloane was feeling. So according to Sloane, JonBenet came to her in adult form. She was tall, slender, and very shy. She was very introverted and came to her like a librarian, almost like she was just constantly educating herself. She was one that didn't want to, like, wear makeup. She was constantly, like, looking down, like, completely different from the pictures we've seen of her in the afterlife. Mm-hmm. She believes if she was alive today, she would be a researcher. She chooses not to be seen as a beauty queen. She really wants to be hidden. Mm-hmm. Like, she hates that her face is out mm-hmm. there. She doesn't like that. She spends her time now observing her family and trying to understand what happened. She does feel warmness towards her family. She still focuses on her family unit. Like, she still has it. Like, these are my people. These are my family. I love them very much. Now, she feels that Burke and Patsy did not kill her, but that JonBenet is suspicious of her mother's knowledge. Now, she didn't like to answer the question, like, when Sloane was saying, like, who killed you? Can you give me an answer? She was very protective of that answer, it sounds like, but she showed Sloane the Christmas party her family attended in 1996. She showed her a group of adult men at the party with her father who were talking business in the corner. Like she said, for like the rest of the family, it was like a party, but for the father, it was about like business connections. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind networking. Of a group of men smoking cigars. Mm-hmm. Yep. JonBenet showing being used in that group, kind of like a, from like a photographer standpoint, like a photographer in town in this group would take pictures of children, and these affluent men in town would come and be like, you know, like children who are in pageants or children of families and be like, hey, I want pictures of this. And a photographer would tell the family, like, hey, I'll take pictures of you. And he would take inappropriate pictures to give these groups of men, kind of like a child trafficking ring of pornography. Mm-hmm. JonBenet shows this group of men and shows a struggle with her father. And then when she's like, well, did your father have anything to do with this? She said JonBenet kept closing her mouth and looking down. Mm-hmm. And, like, wouldn't say, because she loved her family, but, like, had, like, a shame. Yeah. She said that this soul is crossed over and feels great shame still in the afterlife, that she wears her trauma. And she was a young girl dealing with a history of abuse. and she's still kind of dealing with that in the afterlife. Now, when channeling Patsy, because she said that Patsy did come through with her, she said she will still not present herself in a light that would make her be looked down upon. So even in the afterlife, she doesn't want someone to look down upon her. That she loved her daughter, but she does blame her husband for the passing of her daughter. She says that John did not do it, but that he was involved in a circle which put JonBenet at risk. Sloan feels Patsy wrote the note, did actually write that note, but she was forced to do it because she was blackmailed into doing it. So Patsy, she even said, like, because she died from cancer, like, Patsy was so upset about what happened and was trying to protect everything. And because it was all these, you know, influential people that were doing this, that Patsy still doesn't feel like I wrote the note. But even though she wrote it, she didn't feel, she was blackmailed, so she doesn't really put herself in that I did that. And that her cancer was caused by her because she was so sick about what happened. Now, Sloan believes some authorities were involved in this case, which is why it's not solved. These upper authorities in town. This is a group that is aware of, there is a group out there that is aware of what happened. And there are other children right now that were children at that time that experienced the same thing as JonBenet, but they might not fully remember it. Sloan says that at this time, some of those children that are now adults, that are now around our age, are going to therapy. And they're starting to get some of those thoughts back, some of those memories. So there might be some children coming forward soon. They're not children, obviously. They're adults that are going to kind of say something like, hey, you know, there's a ring or there's pictures or something like that. And that's going to be connected to how JonBenet was murdered. Now, Sloan does not believe we will ever know who actually murdered JonBenet. But she does believe it was some sort of child trafficking thing gone wrong. So that was her channeling.
Interesting.
Which would make 100% sense. All of it.
It does. It does. It. So. Okay. Rewind.
Okay.
Was she one of the redacted mediums? Or is this just somebody you found that did it? That did a reading.
Someone I found. Okay. I couldn't find much of those other mediums. Yeah, I tried my best.
Which is there also ones brought like, in. Why is it rejected? Like, A, like, maybe it can't hold up in court. It's inadmissible. Or B, if this is an sort of inside job and there's people of authority in charge, they may have said something.
Exactly.
They redacted it. Interesting. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, and that happens. That happens with these powerful, rich people. When you get that crazy fucking money like that, it's like you almost become like a different person.
Yeah. I mean, it honestly...
And it seemed like John...
It sort of reminds me of kind of the conspiracies that are going around or have been going around with Chris Cornell and Chester Bennington, you know?
Yes. Yep. 100%. And Anthony Modane's in that, too.
Yeah.
In that kind of same circle with his suicide. We should do a...
Yeah.
Do a story on them. Their connection, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, just their connection of these suicides that were traced to people, you know, trying to say the truth about, like, sex rings and children abuse and everything like that. And then all of a sudden, they commit suicide.
Yeah. 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 That's a whole other tangent I will go off on because I have opinions on that, too. But it just, it makes me fearful for these children who are now adults that may have their memories come about. And if there really are people on the inside that are working on this, like, they need to wash their back.
Yep. And that's why, I mean, with Patsy, she, coming forward, she was saying, like, how terrible her life was after that. And that she actually brought her own cancer on herself. Because she just felt like she's like she knew, but she turned a blind eye to it. Like she knew, but she didn't know.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah,
it's
like kind of,
it's scary.
He opened up.
What are you supposed to do?
He opened up the opportunity and put her at risk. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So the other one was Tracy Brown. Now she's mainly uses tarot. She does channeling, but she did like a tarot read on this, and this was in 2016. It was very interesting. There was similar things, but she has a completely different route that she went. So take it again, just like Sloan, with a grain of salt. So Tracy said she came back and she was kind of more forceful, where Sloan said she was kind of down and like, you know, like, I don't want to be seen. This girl came back is very high, like, I want to talk. I want my voice to be heard. This needs to be mm-hmm. said. So she said that her family treated her like an object for money, not like she was a person, like an object. But just like Sloane said, she still very much loves her family. She stayed with her family. She still very much loved them. But she always felt as a young girl like she was just this poster child for them, mm-hmm. for these rich people mm-hmm. type of deal.
She's a trophy and on the shelf. Trophy
on the shelf. She immediately felt alone after death. She immediately missed her mother and father. She said that there was a game that went wrong. So she said that she did have years and years of sexual abuse through a family member. I'll say it. It's allegedly, because I don't want to get sued. Mm-hmm. This is what...
Allegedly.
Tracy Brown, allegedly. Allegedly, Tracy Brown said that came through is that her father was molesting mm-hmm. her through her childhood, and she tried to come forward and, like, tell her mom mm-hmm. and all that, and her mom and stuff was like, oh, I don't want to ruin her situation. I don't want to ruin my house. I don't want to ruin what her family looks like. I don't want to have this reputation. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like Burke was probably in that molestation, too, which would make sense. I mean, they were both wetting the bed. They were both doing all these mm-hmm. things, which are both signs. So both the children were dealing with this. She didn't say if Burke was dealing with the father too, but that's what Tracy's saying. Mm-hmm. I guess that JonBenet was threatening, like, I'm going to tell grandma, mm-hmm. like starting to threaten. And Burke took it upon himself because he was young and naive and just didn't understand, you know, why she would do this, that Burke had hit her and that the family was covering it up. And it was something that just needed to be done, type of deal. So the reason Tracy says this was not solved, because she said money and power play a big role in the way this case was solved. Everything we know about her death was completely staged and completely alive. And she loves her family very much. She's very confused about why it happened. But I guess it was pretty much Burke was trying to keep her quiet. I thought he was trying to do something good for the family.
Yeah.
So that's Tracy Brown. You can see that on YouTube, and it was a video from 2016.
Interesting.
So maybe, who knows? It makes sense.
Yeah.
So now, coming to this, I just want to say what's been done in this case now. So they have tested over 1,000 DNA samples.
Wow.
1,000 DNA samples without a hit. Police have received and reviewed and investigated more than 21,000 tips, letters and emails. Absolutely okay. Not, but he was very much, he was there with her during her death. He still, like, would even say my wife. So he dated Natalie Holloway's mom, and then in 2011 he got married to Jan Rizzo, a Las Vegas fashion designer, and they're still married. So what John says of Patsy, he said before she died, she said, well, we're gonna have to find you a new wife. I told her I was happy with the one I had, but I know she'll be happy with me. He adds, I let Patsy's family know about the wedding. They're very delighted. So today, John Ramsey, age 79, is still working on this case. And he actually has a petition out right now asking the governor to take the DNA testing and have it tested by an outside agency.
Hmm.
So, and people go back and forth on that. That's showing a father that's really, really trying to get that DNA. He's trying to get away from the police because he's like, he doesn't blame the police. He's like, they're very small,
mm-hmm.
very small county. They don't have the resources. He's like willing to pay for stuff. There's a petition out right now to have other people who can do it. But a lot of people are saying, oh, that's perfect for him because he can show that he's like, I'm not a suspect because his DNA doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, he knows for sure his DNA doesn't matter. Yeah. So why not keep pushing it? So you can go either or on that one. He just says it's given lack of process. He says that he gives them a lot of credit for trying their best. But as he quotes, they are a small community and they don't have a lot of police resources and no experience in homicide. I don't fault them with that. But they are refusing help from those that really know what they are doing. Arrogance and egos are getting in the way, and there's a lot of qualified people willing to help.
Yeah. It's true.
So, and he's not wrong. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So, Burke today lives a very quiet life. I could not find much on him. Like, he's not online. He's very hidden. So, as of now, he's 36 years old, and according to US Weekly, which, again, I'm sorry I had to use US Weekly. Mm-hmm. Not the most replicable, was the only thing I could really find on him, that Burt earned a degree from Purdue University in 2010, and he works as a software engineer. In 2012, Burke had a successful STEM job and is in a serious relationship with a girlfriend. And that's in 2012.
Sure.
I mean, that's a while ago. That's all I could find on him. Mm-hmm. Now, he did do that 2016 interview with Dr. Phil. Please watch it. It's amazing. I'm going to keep... I love Dr. Mm-hmm. Phil. I don't care what anyone says. This girl over here loves trash Dr. Phil. I love him. I love him so much. I could watch it all day. Some bonbons. It's amazing. So he did his only interview with Dr. Phil, and it was widely criticized. He defended himself against those, including the host, saying he seems unbothered by the tragedy. Like, as everyone sees him, he's unbothered. And he said, at some point, you just have to move on. I am not saying I moved on then. I might have been kind of on the other end. I didn't really get it. You have to stop crying at some point, I guess. Like, he talks really strange. Like, it's very much like, I don't know. Watch it. There's not really an answer. He's smiling and laughing the whole time, but that's just, again, I don't know if he's diagnosed with something, but his family even said, like, there's something going on with him.
Yeah, well,
now,
and it makes me think, too, he's a software engineer, too. A lot of those types of personalities are very similar, you know? They're very smart and they're intelligent. Sometimes they keep a little quiet. They're different, and their brains think different ways because they're really, you know, very intelligent. Maybe there could be some autism, but yeah, I don't know, just the way that his life has moved and the way he's kept under the radar makes me think, yeah, he's just a different type of personality. And I don't know, some people don't understand those types. I worked at a software company. I worked with a lot of software engineers. Mm-hmm. And they're great people, but yeah, they're different. People don't know how to, if you've ever seen the divide between software engineers and like the marketing and sales departments, two totally different personality types, and and they don't always understand each other. So I can see how a lot of the country might not understand his thoughts and his way of thinking and holding himself and perceiving him differently. So,
exactly. And even Dr. Phil tried to explain that to people. Dr. Phil has done interviews just with himself on different networks, mm-hmm. and they have brought up Burke a lot because it was such a huge interview. Mm-hmm. And he tries to explain, like, this kid, he calls him a kid, but he's not, but he calls him a kid. He's like, this kid is not in the public eye. He's really shy. Mm-hmm. He's really scared. He spent his whole life being scrutinized. He has had two sisters that mm-hmm. died. He's laughing and stuff. And I do. I laugh when I'm in an awkward situation. I do.
Yeah, I use
and
humor.
I mean, my husband... Oh, my husband gets so mad at me. Like, if my husband starts crying, I have to bite my lip. And I feel terrible about mm-hmm. it. But people would say that, like, oh, that's just, like, psychopathic behavior. And it's, like, it's just, like, an automatic, like, I'm awkward. I'm awkward. Yeah. Like, yeah. It's, like, I don't even know how to describe
it. Weird people.
Yeah. Exactly.
Hence the name of our podcast. So,
exactly. So, the Boulder Police Department is still looking for the person who murdered JonBenet. In a video in 2006, the current police chief, Greg Tesla, said, "Our goal continues to be an arrest and successful prosecution. We will not give up on this." As of November 9th of 2002, the Boulder Police Department and Boulder County District's Attorney Office announced they are consulting with Colorado Cold Case Review Team in 2023 to help further this investigation. So they are starting to finally reach out. I think John Ramsey had a lot to do with that, with kind of outside sources. Now, if JonBenet was alive today, she would be 34 years old. JonBenet was buried beside her half-sister, Elizabeth Ramsey, who died in that car crash, and then also her late mother. Now, if you have any information regarding this case, please call Boulder Police Department, and their phone number is 303-441-3333. And that is the case of JonBenet Ramsey.
Wow, that was a doozy.
Yes.
That was a doozy.
It was a long one.
Yeah. Incredible, though. I mean, I just... I don't even know what to say.
Yeah.
There are so many points, and you just... dead ends and roundabouts and... holy shit.
That's why when people... I mean, I've always... I've never... was like, oh, I'm 100% sure it's the Ramseys. But I've always kind of went in the theory from what I've documentaries, you know, I'd watch like a half an hour documentary here or there, like the stuff they put on the news for 5 minutes. And this Burke theory would always be the one in my head where it's like, oh, that makes sense. You know, mm-hmm. that makes sense. But now, like, really, and I've just said that as that. I always think it could be anything. But I look at it as a whole now. Like, even the DNA thing, I would always in my head go, oh, they were cleared by DNA, so that must mean. But I didn't look at how the DNA actually was. I didn't look deep enough into this to see that it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I know that everyone wants to say how much it matters, but I just don't personally see it as something that does, especially when so many people have come forward and said, hey, like, they've tested, like, in underwear where they have taken fingerprints in underwear. Mm-hmm. And, like, had it sit in, like, patent stuff and how it can still be there.
Yeah, yeah. We've come so far with DNA testing and just forensics in general. Mm-hmm. I keep going back to the fact that there was so much evidence that she had consistent sexual abuse. And, like, how does that happen at that age? If it's not outside the home, you know?
And like I said, 91% of children who experience that, it's usually a trusted family member that is inside of the home or inside with the family, friend or family. So, and it's always the people you least expect type of deal. And I mean, the Sloan theory, the psychic Sloan theory, makes a lot of sense too.
It really,
like, something like that makes so much sense. So I mean, that was a video from 2019, and her stuff, like, she actually she's on video, I think it was like kind of right after JonBenet's passing, there's a video of that too where she's like on a news thing and people are asking her to like channel, and she really couldn't then. And even in this video, you could tell she was having a hard time, and she's saying, well, she doesn't really want to come forward and talk about it. Mm-hmm. Like, her face is everywhere. She doesn't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Now, even.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm like, well, that would make sense, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's...
people that have gone through traumatizing deaths don't... It seems like they don't always cross over right away. They don't cross over easily. They're stuck in it, and... Who know, you know, time doesn't pass the same way it does here, you know, on this plane.
No.
So that would, yeah, that would make a lot of sense to me, too.
It would. Yeah, I thought it was very interesting. She has a two-parter. Mm-hmm. Please go look at it. It makes the most sense to me, personally. I know it's a psychic reading, but with the, I'm connecting not only the reading, I'm talking about the evidence in the case. Or it has to be someone that we don't know yet that's really close to the family. But with the DNA evidence not being, which are going to keep pushing it, and they're going to keep saying, like, if the DNA evidence, if someone doesn't have that DNA, they're not going to prosecute them. It is all conclusive.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't get, you know, it's supposed to be when you're charged with murder, it's not about conclusive evidence. It's, and I mean, the parents were indicted. In 2006, they were indicted. Mm-hmm. There was enough conclusive evidence. Not to, that put him with murder, but to put him that she was murdered because of abuses that she experienced through them. It was just the DA at the time that was like, no,
family friend,
I'm not doing this.
Yeah
So but they also said, like, if I brought this to trial, it would be a waste of taxpayers' money because there's not enough evidence to show that they did it. Mm-hmm. In my mind, there is. Even if they didn't do it, and this is nothing against the Ramseys, even if they didn't do it, which sucks, just because of where it was, because of the tools that were used, everything like that, there's enough evidence.
Yeah, I could see that going to trial for sure. In no way would I ever think, oh, that won't go anywhere.
No. I mean, no.
And everybody seems to have their opinions. But yes, mine definitely aligns more with you and Sloan's, and just the fact that it's somehow connected within the family. She didn't suffer that much abuse under her family's radar at that age, you know?
If it wasn't for the history of sexual abuse that was proven, I would 100% think differently.
Yeah.
But that's a huge thing. And then also something I didn't bring up, and I don't know why I didn't. She did go, when she was 3 years old, she went to a doctor because she had some reddening around her vagina.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother did bring her in. The doctor did come forward and say it could be signs of sexual abuse as young as that, but it could also be a sign of affection of a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he couldn't determine it was from molestation or from objects or anything like that. But, I mean, she did go in when she was 3 years old and have redness of her vagina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, another...
That poor little girl.
Another little dead end roundabout. You just... Oh, my God, this case.
So what I'll do is, when we put this out, I will post on here. And I would love to hear other people's theories. If there's a theory that you know or anything like that, or someone that I don't know who you could find that I didn't find, but if there's someone that you're like, no, I know this John down the street. He did it.
Yeah. Please. I know another clown.
Another clown. Please send let us know. Comment. I would love to hear it. And if there's any updates of any case that we do, but of this, we'll make sure to always, in future episodes, post an update. Obviously, the only one right now is Gary Olivia, but fuck that guy.
Yeah.
I just think he's a pervy.
Yeah.
Whatever.
No, no thanks.
But yeah, send us theories. You can write on our Facebook or Instagram, which is at Girls Gone Weird. You could send us an email. We love emails, and you could be kept anonymous at girlsgoneweirdemail@gmail.com. I said it right.
You said it right. Good job. I said it right. I won't mention all the other words you made up during this episode, but...
Did I make up any
there
words?
There were a couple. But that's you. And the viewers, the listeners, I should say, have been warned that you make up words. So I was like, I'm not going to call her out.
Did it make me sound smarter at least?
At the end of the year, we should do a call to action to have everybody send in all the words that Denny has made up.
I would love that. We'll see, because I feel like I am a genius.
Maybe I'm just smarter than all of you. Uh-huh. Start your list now, people. Make a notes in your phone. All the words she makes up.
Or send us your spooky stories. Send us if you have something similar. Send us anything. Yeah, just Girls Gone Weird email. We love it. Tell us if you want to be anonymous.
Yep. Anonymous or not. Pronouns. Send us what you got. I'm going to try to do those monthly listener episodes. So we love a constant stream of stories of any type.
Oh, and on anything that you're listening to, like if you're on Spotify, Apple, whatever you're listening to, give us like a 5-star review too, because... We don't have sponsors yet, as of now. And we like money. Like,
I don't know.
I did this. She doesn't. I worked a month and a half on this. I would love a $5 spot my way from a sponsor. Mm-hmm. So put a $5. If you didn't like it, you can fuck off.
And if you didn't like it, just don't tell us, because I'm sensitive.
Don't tell us.
And I will quit.
I want only happy compliments. But I do like some nasty ones. You could, but don't put it on the thing. Send it to me by email.
Yeah.
Tell me how terrible I am.
Yeah. If you have one-star reviews, if you hate us, just email us personally.
Love it. Bring it.
Well, thank you so much for that episode.
Yeah, you're welcome, and I love you very much. And we will talk soon. And thank you, everybody.
Yeah, this has been Girls Gone Weird, and we will catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Hey weirdos, it's me again. Just wanted to go ahead and cap this episode with some more resources, because just like the last one, there was some heavy shit in here, and we want to make sure that we are always providing information to help people that may be going through similar circumstances or know somebody who is. You're not alone. There's help available. We're here. If you're not comfortable talking to us, then please utilize these resources. There is the National Human Trafficking Hotline that you can call at 1-888-373-7888. There is the National Sexual Assault Hotline that is also 24/7. That is 1-800-686-4673. You can also go online and report an incident or a suspicious situation that may involve the sexual exploitation of minors. You can file a report on the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children website, and you can get there by going to www.cybertipline.com, or you can call 1-800-843-5678. There's also some resources at justice.gov. If you go to the Action Center and click Report Crime or Submit Complaint, you can submit things anonymously as well.
And there's also humantraffickinghotline.org where you can report trafficking. So there really is a lot of resources. And please let us know if we can help in any sort of way. But yeah, just wanted to cap that. And we hope you'll stick around for episode Trace, which is a very exciting one. It's a spooky one. So hang on to your pants and come get weird with us.
Until next time, this has been Nicole and Denny with Girls Gone Weird.
Girls Gone Weird. Girls Gone Weird!